There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go, a Midday Mobile. Jeff Poor filling in, co-hosting today for the legendary Sean Sullivan. Also joining me on I guess we call it clean feed here, our friend from Alabama today. You can hear on my program on Fridays, April Marie. April, how are you this afternoon?
Doing great today. How are you?
We're on hour number four radio, so hanging in there, feeling pretty solid.
I was
going to
say, I hope you had a lot of caffeine today. I don't know if I could do 5 hours of radio straight.
I have a lot of caffeine every day. It's probably not good for me, but that keeps you going. But I'm excited for today. We're watching, for better or for worse, history unfold before us.
We really are. It's kind of crazy to... It's like every time I hit refresh on my computer, there's something new. And some of the swing states, or states that are still in play, are, you know, under 1,000 or around 1,000 votes separating the candidates. It's kind of anxiety-inducing.
Yeah, I think anxiety-inducing is a good way to describe it. But, man, I just... there's this overwhelming sense of pessimism that no matter who gets it, Trump or Biden, that this isn't good for the country.
It isn't. As long as we maintain the Senate, I'm personally not going to freak out. If they get the Senate and the White House, then I'm don't know what I'm going to do. But I feel like all of this is going to cause a lot of people to pay more attention to the elections process. So if you're looking for a silver lining in this, which I look for a silver lining in everything, I think it's that we reassess the laws in place to protect the integrity of elections.
Well, you know, no matter what comes out of this, you got to think that we're going to see. I mean, January 2021 is going to be a whole different era in American politics. The way it's going right now, I mean, doesn't it feel we're gearing up for like a Tea Party 2.0 movement or something?
I do. Well, and I feel like that was coming anyway. I feel like the BLM movement itself, and some of the things they've been calling for, defund the police and, just socialized medicine for everybody and all sorts of things, higher taxes on the rich and the Green New Deal. I feel like those kinds of things were starting to stir the hearts and minds of those of us who were early Tea Party people. And so if we have a Democrat in the White House, it gives us that much more reason to pull the trigger and reorganize.
Well, you wonder, though, what Republican politicians, there's an opportunity here. And like you were pointing out, I think that you'll have the firewall with the Senate probably. Georgia does concern me a little bit, but I think that is something Republicans can take care of business in Georgia in January. But then you're going to have so we won't have statehood for Puerto Rico or D.C. or the courts won't get packed. And it looks like you tighten that margin in the House. Pelosi's going to have a lot of problems on her hand. This isn't going to go smooth for her. But how do Republicans play this going ahead? And that was always the thing. Republicans talked big during the Tea Party movement, but then they, I would argue, under-delivered the first few the first couple of years of the Trump administration.
Well, I think that's why we have, so it's funny, both of our guests today are members of the Freedom Caucus. I think that's why we have the Freedom Caucus, because people said, hey, we made these promises, we need to keep them.
Yeah, they make these promises and they need to keep them, but this time the right is going to have to, this time the Tea Party guys are going to have to hold the ground or whatever and, hold Republicans accountable. It's like I was saying in my last show, we start out with, well, we got to get the House, and they get the House. Well, that's not enough. We got to get the Senate. They get the Senate. Well, it's great to have the House and the Senate, but you really want to make a difference. You really, really got to get the presidency, and then they get it, and then here we are. We're up late watching C-SPAN or MSNBC or Fox News or whatever, and here comes John McCain with the thumbs down. We're let down. They didn't have the votes to repeal Obamacare. I think this time around, people don't want to see something like that happen if you're on the right.
Well, I think if Biden wins now, then we focus all of our energy on making sure he's a one-term president. We focus our energy on that, and like you said, on picking up the House and the midterms between now and then. We rebuild our party. There's a lot of, quote, never Trumpers. Got to figure out their place in the world, because, I'm not a big fan of Trump himself as an individual. I love his policies. I love his cabinet. But Trump the man... I voted for him, but it took me to the last minute, to think about that. But the never Trumpers who were anti Amy Coney Barrett's nomination and confirmation, who are against the Republican senators, what do we do with those folks? And we as a party have to figure out, are there any of those people who are still principled who can come back into the fold? Or what happens as we move forward to our party? Because I think we have to be redefined. We have to redefine ourselves by our principles. Small government, accountability, transparency, the things that make our country great, really abiding by the Constitution. And when we do that, that's how I think we regain our strength as a party and get the elected officials we want who are going to do the right thing.
I'll tell you what's going to be interesting, I think, is how are these primaries going to play out? That's always something that Republicans that get too complacent, that maybe are a little too moderate, or we call them rhino. I guess that's a pejorative now, but whatever. How are they going to, how are they going to defend their turf? How are they going to approach this? It seems very early on the focus is going to be on doing something to reform or at least shore up public confidence in elections. I think that's kind of all of a sudden at the top of the list.
It's a huge thing. I think our states have to do what they can, and then I think there should be some sort of federal guidelines on voter integrity minimums. Your state can do more to protect the votes, but they can't do less than certain things. And I think we really need to get back to Election Day being a day, not being a week, not absentee ballots for all, never, ever, ever mail-in votes, sent to everybody. But we, early voting, I think we need to get back to the only time you get a ballot outside of a polling place on Election Day is if you fit very narrow criteria. And this election is showing why that's necessary.
Well, and I think you're right about that. My hope is the public, it keeps the faith. I know I talked to a lot of Republicans today. They're dispirited. They're like, what's the point? But hopefully they get past it in a hurry and look to fight another day. We gotta take a quick break here. We'll be right back. This is Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore and April Marie Fogle filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, coming back to Jeff Poore, guest hosting with April Marie Fogle for today's Midday Mobile in just a second. But first, let's check in with Larry Kirby with LCM Motor Cars. Hey, Larry.
Good afternoon, Dalton. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Weather fantastic outside. Means it's a great day to stroll the lot at LCM. Let's talk inventory. What do you have on the lot?
You know, we got a great inventory. We got the best selection of local one-owner trade-ins we've had in a long time, and that's a mix of cars, trucks, sport utilities, sports cars, two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive trucks. So we got a great selection.
Now, I know with hunting season coming up and towing boats around, that trucks are a big want right now, and you just mentioned it, but you have a lot of those on the lot right now.
Absolutely. We've got a lot of four-wheel drives. We've got three crew cab dually trucks on the lot, which a lot of people are looking for. We've got a Dodge and two Ford diesels. Like I said, they're crew cab dually, so they can pull about anything.
And tell everyone about your fantastic selection for financing.
We got a great selection of financing. We've got credit unions, we got banks, we got local finance companies, we got finance companies and lenders throughout the Southeast, so we got over 20 lenders to use.
All right, great. How can people get in touch with you, Larry?
Come see us at Highway 90 and Plantation Road, like us on Facebook, see us online at lcnmotorcars.com, and call us at 375-0068.
All right, thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
That's Larry Kirby checking in from LCM Motor Cars. Now back to Jeff Poor and April Marie Fogle for Midday Mobile.
Thank you, Dalton. It is 20 minutes after the hour on this Friday afternoon. April, I had Baron Coleman on. You know him. Now he's a radio host at Auburn. He says Trump 2024 if should Joe Biden be named president. How do you feel about that possibility?
Say that again.
Trump 2024.
Oh, no.
If it doesn't work this time, would Trump run again?
I say no. I think that the voters in the nation would get Trump fatigue from 4 years. And we're already going to have it at this rate. 4 years of Trump speaking out and tweeting every time Biden does something. And I just don't think it's good for the health of our nation. I don't think his scrutiny, his everything. I feel like we'd get a little fatigued over that.
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing is, if not Trump, then who? And then let's play this out and then just, you know, how it goes. You start running for president after the midterms. You go to Iowa. You go to New Hampshire. You go and you run. You Trump gets into Republican primary. Could anybody beat him?
That's a good question, a different question. But we were asking the same question about whether if Senator Sessions got back in his Senate race, could anybody beat him? And someone did. That's how we have Tuberville. A lot happens over time. Over the next 4 years, maybe a champion will stand out. I love Nikki Haley. I think we have some. Ron DeSantis is making a name for himself. I think we have some people with strong potential. I saw somebody suggest Matt Gaetz. I feel like it's not a bad thing to have a competitive primary and to have lots of individuals out there trying to coalesce and bring together a splintered party.
I feel like Matt Gaetz needs to follow the footsteps maybe of Ron DeSantis, maybe run for governor first. It sounds crazy that someone from the Panhandle could win a gubernatorial election in Florida, but I guess we're kind of thinking the same thing about Gaetz there from the First Coast part of Florida winning Ron DeSantis winning the gubernatorial election last cycle, but it happened. Beat a very well-funded Putnam campaign down there. But as for some of these other, Nikki Haley, I think is just, she's got a, there's a lot of people in the Republican Party that aren't going to be, particularly thrilled with that notion. And then let's look at some of these other names. I just, can any of these people beat Donald Trump if it happens? So it looks like we lost April there. Hopefully she could get back connected to us. But who, if not Trump, then who? 251-343-0106. That's 251-343-0106. Get a little bit of pushback here about Trump 2024. Roy at Spanish Fort says expletive no. Paul Cat with the Candace Owen 2024. I don't know about that. Well, I mean, these aspirational figures running for president, is that something that we can bake on when it comes to every time? It worked this time around, right? It worked with Donald Trump and, you know, this reality show guy, but people liked what he was offering. Is there another Donald Trump? But the thing about Donald Trump, and I say this all the time, it was the package of Donald Trump, right? That he was able to, it wasn't just policy. It was all of these elements put together. It was policy. It was border. I mean, it wasn't just that alone, but it's also this personality where people look at it and they say, I like the guy that's gonna not afraid to mix it up, not afraid to speak his mind, go in there and just start throwing haymakers. And maybe it's like April was saying, can we endure 4 years of that? With him tweeting and criticizing Joe Biden every step of the way. But what are these rallies? Let's say this, let's play this out. What would a Donald Trump rally look like? Looks like we got April back, but could he keep campaigning for the next 4 years, or does it become a law of diminishing returns, you think, April, where, you know, does he need to kind of maybe step back a little bit? They come on strong at the end if he were to run again.
Well, I just don't think he has it in him. It's not his style. I don't think he would be able to help himself. I think he would want to weigh in, like I said, on every decision that Biden makes, from starting from transition all the way through inauguration and then every cabinet decision. I think it would just be a never-ending Trump, which I think would be very harmful if he decided to run again. Now, if he decides to go, you know, return to being a media personality, to take his fame on the speaking circuit, I think that would be different. I honestly don't know. I don't know if you have any opinions of what Trump would do after this, if not run for re-election, if he didn't get a second term. But I think it would be bad for the nation to have 4 more years of that. I love the idea of Republicans, you know, watching and critiquing the Biden administration. Don't get me wrong. That's going to be much needed. But do we want Trump doing it? I say no.
I mean, we don't want Donald Trump critiquing Biden like he's critiquing Arnold Schwarzenegger hosting the Reincarnated Apprentice. You know what I mean?
It would be awful.
There's just something kind of weird about it. Well, I don't like what Trump does post-presidency. And man, I don't want to say that we're getting too far ahead of ourselves here, because the election still, I guess, could go for Donald Trump, but playing this out, I guess a presidential library is in store. Where would that be? Would it be in Manhattan, or would it be down at Mar-a-Lago? Will there be the demand? You know, there's always a demand for presidents after their presidency to do speeches and make big money, but is there going to be a demand to have Donald Trump come speak at your corporate or at your shareholder meeting or whatever, like there is with Bush, with Bill Clinton, with even Jimmy Carter or whoever, but or Obama? I don't know that there's going to be the market for that.
For a certain type of business and a certain type of individual, maybe. But again, I mean, Donald Trump, and you can see this in the election results, you can see this in his rallies, he is very, very popular with Americans. And, you know, even if the election does not go his way, he still is incredibly well received. I was very, I don't want to say surprised, good surprised, at the number of minorities that supported him. Hispanics throughout the country, I joke, it's them rejecting the Latinx term that Democrats were using for them. But I think that there is a place for Trump moving forward if he does not win re-election. And I'm interested to see what that would be. I don't think he is as, I don't think he's as divisive as the media portrays him to be. And I think when the media stops covering his every move, that he'll be a little bit more mainstream.
Let's knock out some text here. 251-343-0106. Named texter says, yes, Trump 2024, if we still have a country. Jason says, not at all interested in opportunistic Nikki Haley. Eddie says, Donald Trump Jr. or Ivanka Trump? A named texter says, why would Republicans not go for Nikki Haley? I'll answer that maybe later in the program. Laura Trump 2024, I like Nikki Haley too. And Paul says, I wonder now that Trump is defeated, would he begin to release some of the inside info he learned as president? And Keith says, Dan Crenshaw 2024. So keep them coming, guys. We got to get a break in here. On the other side, we'll be joined by Congressman Mo Brooks. So stay tuned. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan with along with April Marie Fogle of Alabama today. Still to come on the program in the next hour, you want to stay tuned. Congressman Paul Gosar will join us. That's in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll talk about what's going on in Arizona and some other things. Joining us now, always glad to get this gentleman on. He's very, very gracious with us down here in this Mobile Southwest Alabama audience. Congressman Mo Brooks. Congressman, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing fine. Very upset by what is happening to our country, like a lot of American citizens are, but personally doing very well. How about you?
Hanging in there. We're both hanging in there. I guess first up, let's talk about the election. It looks like some votes are starting to, I mean, they're going into Biden column, and certainly doesn't bode well for Trump right now. Your reaction to what's unfolded the last few days?
It's going to come down to whether Congress will allow illegal votes to sway the election outcome.
Now, what can Congress do to, I guess, stop anything at this point?
Congress is the body that determines who wins presidential election, not the Supreme Court, Congress. Each of the states will report their electoral college votes to Congress, and if there is a dispute, Congress will determine whether to recognize or not recognize those electoral college votes. It's happened many times in the 1800s, none recently. And I have one major problem with what has transpired that suggests to me that there are lots of illegal votes. Under the United States Constitution, Congress is charged with the responsibility of determining the time of elections. Under the United States Code, Congress decided that elections would be on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. So Congress decided that there would be an election day on November 3rd, this past Tuesday. It wasn't an election week. It wasn't an election month. It wasn't an election season. It was an election day. Further, people who are incapable of making it to the polls on election day have the right to do an absentee ballot, provided they have sufficient evidence that they cannot make it to the polls on the election day determined by Congress. So to me, all of these votes that are coming in that were not cast on election day or by an absentee ballot process that allows people who are incapable of voting on election day, all of those votes, all the other votes, are illegal. You've got two votes that are lawful, absentee ballots, where you physically cannot attend, and then those votes that were physically cast on election day. And those states who have ignored that part of the United States Constitution and that part of the United States Code are in trouble.
I feel like that's those are important points that have not been talked about. We've seen some judges, what I call activist judges, who have done and said things that are impacting elections in a major way, like saying that your ballot has to be postmarked by election day versus arrived by election day, like we do here in Alabama. We've seen judges get involved in this. Do you feel like any of these are going to go to the Supreme Court? Do you feel strongly that the Supreme Court would rule in the right direction? right way to honor the integrity? And then I guess my second question is, when you talk about Congress, how do the Nancy Pelosi's and AOC's of the world weigh into the responsibilities of Congress?
Well, you've given me multiple questions and one introduction.
Let me be real clear, okay? Yes.
Under the United States Constitution, the United States Supreme Court has no lawful authority to determine the winner of a presidential race, period, end of subject. It's the United States Congress that does that. Then there would be somewhat of an open debate as to how Congress is to do that. If no candidate gets a majority of the Electoral College votes, then under those circumstances, the United States Constitution, Amendment number 12, is very clear. The House of Representatives is to vote by states. So there are only 50 votes, not 435. There are 435 congressmen. There are only 50 votes. Each state casts one vote. Under those circumstances, the Republicans hold a majority of the votes, and we determine who the President of the United States is. Somewhat similarly, on the Senate side, they would determine who the Vice President of the United States is. So although Nancy Pelosi has a majority of the votes of the membership of the United States Congress, she does not have a majority of the state votes in the House of Representatives. And so the key fight's going to be which governs. The 50 state rule that is explicitly stated in the United States Constitution, or majority of 435 members of Congress rule.
Got it.
Congressman, no matter what happens, Biden wins, Trump wins, one side's not going to be happy, the other side, maybe it'll feel victorious. I don't know really how to gauge emotions, but I do think there's going to be a real public lack of confidence or even distrust in our election processes. What needs to be done to restore the faith in elections in America?
We need to get socialist Democrats to agree to an election process by which only American citizens vote, only amongst those American citizens, those who are eligible vote, and that we require identification at the polls in order to ensure that the people who say they are voting are on the list of eligible voters. In some states, you don't have to show any kind of identification. You can walk in and vote for anyone you want if you're brazen enough to do it. And it's happened before, it'll happen again, and that taints the election process. Unfortunately, the Socialist Democrats are very good at voter fraud, very adept at stealing elections, and they don't want any safeguards that would help ensure that only eligible United States citizens determine the outcome and the governance of our American governments.
Well, to piggyback on that, I think on the Senate side, Josh Hawley, a United States Senator over there, says maybe we need to look at increasing penalties or just outlawing ballot harvesting altogether, but certainly increasing penalties for election fraud. But my only concern with that would be the federal government's involvement in state elections. You want states to handle those, but is it maybe time for the federal government to consider such measures?
The federal government, under the Constitution, has the right and power to be engaged in elections for president, the House of Representatives, and the United States Senate. States can do what they want, city, county, state level, although typically the laws are the same for all kinds of elections. But with respect to federal elections, we can engage, and we have engaged, unfortunately. One of the worst pieces of legislation is referred to as motor voter that the Democrats helped get through the United States Congress and signed into law. And that makes it illegal for our voter registrars to ask people for proof that they are American citizens, which opens the doors for non-citizens to vote, which, by the way, is exactly what the Socialist Democrats want. They want to open up all of our elections to non-citizens voting, as is evidenced by those cities in which the Socialist Democrats are in total control, and they have made it lawful for non-citizens both illegal aliens and lawful immigrants to register to vote and vote. San Francisco being the largest such municipality in America that has taken away governance of their municipality from American citizens and made it more of a world government kind of thing with all these non-citizens participating in their elections. That's where the Socialist Democrats want to take us, and that's wrong.
Go ahead, April.
Okay. My question is, so we've got, when the election results shake out for the presidential elections, refocusing on taking back the House. How do you feel, do you feel any different now that this election has gone through on the will of the American people for to get rid of the Nancy Pelosi's, AOC's power in shaping legislation so that we can get back to the principles of the Constitution and what we want as a small government, fiscally responsible?
Well, I would love for Nancy Pelosi to be fired once again, but it does not look like that's going to happen with this election cycle. Certainly, of the three entities, White House, Senate, and House, as of now, only in the House has the GOP made gains, and we're probably going to make a gain of around 10 seats. So far, we're up by six. So far, not a single incumbent Republican has lost election, and we've still got a 10 or so, maybe 12 seats that have not yet been declared. No victor has been declared, and we'll see how that plays out, but the current estimate is around 210. So we will not be able to unseat House Speaker Pelosi. They can continue to push their socialist agenda. If they take over the White House, they will have a president that will assist in that pushing. And right now, it looks like there is a reasonable possibility that the Socialist Democrats are even going to steal the United States Senate from us. Keeping in mind that we think we're at 51 or 52 Senate seats, but if they steal those two in Georgia, then we have lost the Senate. If we've also lost the White House, because Kamala Harris as vice president would be the deciding vote, breaking a 50-50 tie, and the Democrats would be in control of all three.
Well, let's elaborate on that. Georgia with a special election in January, potentially for two Senate races. We know at least one with Raphael Warnock and Kelly Loeffler, but perhaps David Perdue and John Ossoff could be on that ballot as well. Do you think Republicans are going to be energized to go show up in January, vote with so much on the line, or do you think there's going to be maybe an element of demoralization here because maybe your vote really doesn't count? You were disenfranchised, you felt like your vote was stolen from you, this election was stolen by the as you call it, the Socialist Democrats. I mean, how do you keep spirits up, I guess, on our side?
I am absolutely certain that patriotic Americans will rise to the challenge and they will be motivated to vote like never before. The problem is going to be if the Socialist Democrats are still able to scheme and connive and steal elections by counting illegal votes. Therein is where the problem lies. And I wish there was a magic wand by which we could limit our elections to lawfully cast votes by eligible American citizens. But unfortunately, there are plenty of ways, plenty of workarounds by which the Socialist Democrats have proven that they are capable and very adroit at voter fraud and stealing elections. And I've mentioned this to you before in your audience. Go to the New York Post article that was in early October, late September, where they interviewed a paid professional election theft, and he detailed exactly how he was able to steal votes and get away with it. And that was before the Socialist Democrats did what they did in so many different places around the country that made it even easier for them to steal elections, most importantly with these mail-out ballots without any real way of determining who it is that cast those ballots once they're received. I've got an elected official over in Decatur. His son and daughter, they used to live in Georgia. They moved to Texas. They did not cast a ballot in that Georgia election, but someone cast it for them, for both of them. And apparently that's fairly commonplace. And in an election as close as it is in Georgia, that by itself, that kind of practice where you have Socialist Democrats casting ballots for people who have moved out of state, that can tip the balance.
Joined by Congressman Mo Brooks here. Just a couple more minutes. The Republicans did make gains in the House. It doesn't look like you lost a single seat, despite what the polls were telling us in the House of Representatives. It's not control, and or maybe it could be if some things go Republicans' way. But how do you feel sitting here on Friday afternoon about what had happened for the Republicans in the House of Representatives?
I'm very pleased that we exceeded the expectations of 95% of the so-called experts. Internally, our polling data was pretty accurate. We just had a conference call of the GOP conference and went through some of that information in detail. And we knew from our polling data which of these elections were close, where to place our resources, i.e. allocate our money and our volunteers. And it tipped the balance in a good number of them, which is why we ended up gaining at least six so far, but probably in the neighborhood of 10 seats once everything is said and done. So I'm very pleased with the way the polling worked with us, and I'm very pleased that in these districts, once the public was exposed to the public policy issues, that they were able to discern that what we stand for on behalf of America is vastly superior to the damage that's going to be done by the socialist Democrat agenda.
Congressman, we're up against the break. Got to leave it there. But thank you on such short notice for coming on and talking about what's going on. It's very
my
very
pleasure.
Important.
Y'all take care.
That was Congressman Mo Brooks here on the program. It's just I guess there is a silver lining to the cloud, if you will. The Republicans did better in the House. We got to get a break in here. April Marie and I will return here very shortly. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan, taking a little time away. Also joining me, very grateful for April Murray Fogel of Alabama today to sit in with me. They're doing 5 hours of radio. They're toward the end. He's the one to kind of help you out here. April, while Congressman Brooks sounds very very ambitious about what Congress needs to do and the powers, I don't know that there's going to be, under these circumstances, an appetite for Congress to be real proactive here.
You know, I'm sitting here struggling because I had not heard that strategy, and I'm sitting here thinking, I just don't know how America would react. And I know, to me, the absolute worst thing to happen to our nation would be an election stolen. But I think we really need to let the process play out that's playing out right now in terms of lawsuits, trying to get all the information about what has happened, trying to find out if there is evidence of widespread fraud that can be documented. And I think we have to go that route. I think that if Congress and the U.S. House of Representatives were to do what Mo Brooks is suggesting and reinstate Trump against what the election results say, I feel like we would have the BLM-type riots, lootings, fires, violence all around this nation. And I know we shouldn't let the threat of that impact, you know, doing what is right, but that is a very scary prospect.
Well, it's not a win-win situation no matter what happens. There's going to be some upset people one way or another. And it isn't that the fear that, well, what are we, you know, how are we going to, how are you going to restore the public's confidence in these elections? I think that there's people on the left that are never going to trust it no matter what, the way this had unfolded. But I would argue to you that certainly if this goes for Biden, there's going to be people on the right. I don't think they'll take it quite as far as Antifa or BLM or whatever, but it's not going in a good direction.
Well, and we're seeing protests today all over the country to stop the steal. And that is a very incredibly valid argument. And of course, to protect the integrity of our elections. I think the Department of Justice needs to get involved. I think we need to do everything we can to make sure that the integrity of elections are are upheld, and that those responsible for the things that we've seen, if you saw the latest Project Veritas video, those responsible for trying to break the law outright, those people need to be held accountable in a very serious way.
Here's the problem. I have no faith whatsoever in the Biden Department of Justice pursuing any of this. I think all of this stuff dies in its tracks. Now, maybe there's been some talk that Senator Jones might be Biden's pick for AG. But, man, like, what about this Durham report? All of these things that we were told were happening that was going to really shed some light on the so-called deep state. You know, if it doesn't happen in the next, between now and the inauguration, if they go ahead and it's President-elect Biden, then it's going to be a long 4 years in that regard.
You make a completely valid point, which is why DOJ today needs to start looking into this. And they need to. Here's the other thing that's lacking right now is accountability and transparency in this process. You're looking at you have. I love watching the images of your house with the multiple TVs. You can look at the multiple different mainstream media channels and their websites and their Twitter and their coverage.
And you can see what they're doing. We got to get to a break.
They're ignoring. Yep.
Up against the hard break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful. And it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go. Hour number two of Midday Mobile underway on FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poor and April Marie Fogel filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan, taking some time away, ready to just kind of chill it out after the tumultuous election cycle. But we got it from here. Joining us on the program now, he represents Arizona's 4th Congressional District. There's a lot of action going on underway in Arizona with this election. Congressman Paul Gosar is on the line. Congressman, how are you? I guess is it still morning there?
It's still morning, and it's still officially just kicked off in the afternoon. So it's a beautiful day here. Temperatures are going to drop this weekend because up north we're going to get snow.
The weather comes in a hurry, the changes, that is. Again, I guess the first question, the obvious question is, a lot of things have changed in the last 10 to 12 hours with this presidential election, and it's, you know, Nevada, Arizona, obviously your neck of the world over there, it's where ground zero, a lot of it's going on. Just your reaction to what you're seeing unfold.
Well, I just came back from a rally that was held outside the Maricopa recorder's office. And basically what's happened is they've underestimated the amount of votes that were set aside to be counted. And most of these, of the block of those votes, were actually the day of or just prior to the general election. And those favored Donald Trump heavily by at least 20%. So the analytics basically show that there's enough votes out there that he should be able to make that up. In fact, I know that just here in another couple minutes, over 5,000 Mojave County ballots from my neck of the woods that went heavily, heavily Trump are going to be dumped into that mix. So the president's got, there's still a great chance to overtake Biden, and that's why you saw 538 basically said way too early to be putting that in Biden's suitcase.
Well, I think we're seeing, you know, these election results trickle in, but I am most impressed by the rallies. And you have been a big part of organizing rallies for the last 3 days there in Phoenix. What is y'all's message, and how are these different from some of the liberal rallies we've seen around the country?
Well, what we're doing is a peaceful, we're happy campers. What we want is we just want to make sure that we have our given right to vote, to assemble, to peacefully assemble, to keep our freedom of speech, and to be able to get our point of God. And it's been very, very great. We said prayers. I mean, we said the pledge. We sang the national anthem. We even sang President Trump's favorite song, you know, YMCA. Post on Wednesday night and Thursday night.
So, I mean, that does not pose much of a threat.
No, but you know what? That's exactly right. But we're all happy campers. You know, the left is angry, and we're happy because, you know, we're a rare country that we have these rights, and we're making sure that we're standing up for them.
Congressman, going forward from here, a lot of your colleagues on Capitol Hill are talking about, you know, it's time to start thinking about restore the public's faith and confidence in elections. I mean, do you see that as something that's going to be a big topic over the next, next couple of years, that there's got to be some kind of rules or some kind of guidelines in place when it comes to, the possibility there's ballot harvesting going on, or abuse of the absentee ballot system? What do you think of all that discussion?
I actually think it's high time we had that conversation. I mean, even the left wants to have that conversation, particularly when we're looking at the voting machine. Isn't it interesting that the Maricopa County has a voting machine the same as Clark County, the only two counties in each of the respective states that has those ballot groups? It just so happens that all the ones in Georgia are the same way. And they were decertified in Texas. And they turned themselves away from North Carolina because they had to disclose who was their investors and who was backing. Interestingly enough, Rubenstein and Soros comes to mind. Pretty interesting.
So we're talking about election, the integrity of the election. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm seeing a lot of misrepresentations about what Republicans want. But you guys have made it clear there. We want to stop the steal. We want to protect the integrity of the elections, make sure that everything is being done on the up and up. Why do you feel like you're getting so much pushback? Why do you feel like there is so much pushback and so much misrepresentation from the media on that?
Well, because they have their narrative, and they what they've done is they bought in hook, line, and sinker, because anybody that has backed Donald Trump has got to be bad. That gets to the whole narrative, April Marie, is that they hate this president more than they love this country. It's not Joe Biden that they're voting for. They're just voting because they hate Donald Trump, because he's getting to the business of the people. He's empowering the people who are the rightful government. You know, these people we're reminding them, and that's why we're having the rally outside, is that to remind them that they work for us, that, you know, we're the governed, and we're allowing them to do this on our stead. So to do it right and do it proper. And so when the narrative is that they're, you know, we're running around toting guns, well, this is a Second Amendment state. And if you don't have a Second Amendment, you don't have a First, a Fourth, or any of the other ones. So what we're doing is making sure that the narrative is peaceful, that we're saying prayers, and I guess maybe the left could interpret that as radical, because they don't believe in God, or at least most of them don't. So, you know, we decided to go that direction and make sure that everybody understands, listen, when it's time for prayer, let's kneel and let's say the prayer. Let's rally with a happy face and be happy campers.
Joined
it's
by
kind of, when you show pictures, it's kind of hard to beat that narrative.
Joined by Congressman Paul Gosar of our Arizona's 4th congressional district here on the program. Congressman, it looks like you and your colleagues made some gains on Tuesday night. That it's not going to mean that you might fall just short of capturing control of the House, but certainly not what the prognosticators, the pollsters, all those guys were telling us, that it was not even a possibility. But here we are sitting here today on Friday. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities, I suppose. But you got to feel kind of decent about the way this all shook out with the House of Representatives and Republicans winning some elections there.
Oh, you're exactly right. And when you look across the country at the state legislature, boy, what a boom. You know, even in Arizona, they thought the state state House and the state Senate were a foregone conclusion. And yet we turned it back to red. So, you know, once again, the narrative isn't what the media wants to purport. And that's what's so odd, is why do you see a state like Arizona going Biden's way? It doesn't make sense. You know, the president came to my district four different times this year, twice to Yuma, once to Prescott, and once for Lake Havas or Bullhead City. Fascinating how the crowds, people winding around just to see, get a glimpse of it. 25,000, 30,000 people in towns that are only 30,000 fully stocked. So, I mean, the outpouring is incredible. And that's why I keep bringing up, how is it that, you know, these voting machines are the same ones that are in Maricopa County, as in Clark County, as in Georgia? What is up here? And, you know, we had a problem with the markers, the felt markers. And they said it was no problem. But we've got hundreds and hundreds of calls from across our district and the state saying, listen, I went in and voted in person. They gave us this felt defense. My vote was rejected. How does that work? So, I mean, it's not what the pundits wanted. And I think that poses a very interesting dilemma, because I think the Democrats will make surely a change in their leadership. At least that's what I predict. And you see Representative Sandberger from Virginia making the claims of, listen, we got to stop talking about the social bullcrap and get back to being normal Americans. So,
well, I think that's a big, good point. Democrats are seeing that the message they had, the defund the police message, the socialist agenda messages, the Green Deals, the AOC talking points failed them this election cycle. And maybe they do start moving from the left a little bit more towards the center. And that would be great for the entire nation. And I can't disagree with that at all. It's really
but
been
interesting. The problem with that, April Marie, problem with that is they grew their ranks.
Yeah.
And AOC and Omar and Tlaib and Presley are not the kind of people that will back down. They're going to come with a fight. And that's why I think there's going to be a civil war that occurs in the next several weeks before the speakership race. And I think there's a change coming. And I think when that change comes, it'll be somebody like Jim Clyburn that they put in that position that maybe can mitigate the fiasco that's occurring within that Democratic Party.
It would be very interesting to see a civil war within the Democrat Party in the House of Representatives that results in Nancy Pelosi not sitting in the chair holding the gavel. That would be something very good for our nation. One of the things that we have talked about is getting back to just an election day. Enough with the early voting, enough with the ballots going everywhere in states around the country. How do you feel about that?
I do. That's, you know, just have a national day of election, you know, so everybody has that time off to be able to get there and do their civic duty and restore the constitutionality of that pride of into our country, every legal vote. I think that's a wonderful idea because, you know, then that allows you to pay the right perspective to this country and the policies that serve it.
Would you support making it a federal holiday, Election Day a federal holiday?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It should be one of those ones that, you know, is so overwhelmingly supported because of our duty to this country. And, you know, it goes back to what John F. Kennedy said, April Marie. It's not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
Congressman, I want to revisit something real quick that you said. Did you think there's the possibility that Pelosi's not Speaker? You mentioned James Clyburn as a possibility. Is that really what you think? There's this. It seems like it's been going on for a while, but the civil war within the Democratic ranks, that it's really, we're really going to see it unfold in a big way, probably more than we had expected.
Well, I see it because of the caucus hearing they had yesterday. It was leaked what Spanberger said for quote. I mean, you know, nothing on the Hill is ever secret. it's always being reported word for word and who's saying it. But, you know, even before that, you saw when we were in session before the October break, you know, the discharge petition where you had 23 Democrats who signed it because they wanted that COVID relief, even on the package of the existing $130 billion that was still left over that no one could use. And so they were rankled, and there was heated conversations over that, and she refused to do it because it was her way or the highway. So there's definitely tensions here, and like I said, the progressives grew, the moderates lost.
Congressman, we're out of time here up against the break, but I really want to thank you for making time for this audience here in Mobile, Alabama, and talking about some of these issues that you guys are having to confront out there.
Well, keep the faith, and you know, the legislature is the only one entitled to change elections, not governors, not county or recording courts or boards. It's the legislature, and I hope everybody says their prayers and that the Supreme Court does its job, and particularly John Roberts, that the jurisdiction should strike down any changes that were made by governors or election boards prior to this election.
Thanks for calling in, sir.
Thanks for doing this. Congressman Paul Gosar joining the program. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Checking back in with Jeff Poor and April Marie Fogle, co-hosting Midday Mobile here in just a second. But right now, I want to talk to my friend Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins. Angelo, how are you today?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Hey, doing fine. And to say this has been a huge week in national news would be an understatement. And it's got me wondering about the cost of gold and silver. What are you seeing in those markets right now?
Well, it's been reflected very dramatically in what's going on in the metal market because it's created a level of uncertainty in what the future holds as far as people's money goes. And so right now you're looking at gold at $1,950 an ounce and climbing, silver at $25.60 an ounce and climbing. And, you know, just a few days ago, silver was around 23-something. So almost a 10% jump in silver just with the news with the election.
Now, if someone is interested in trading with you or somebody like me who really hasn't dabbled in gold or silver before, what steps would you suggest for someone that wants to get into that game?
Well, a couple options. If you want to stay at home and be prepared and think about it and learn a little bit first, you can actually go to the podcast right there. You can listen to us on 106.5 Live every Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to our website, mobilebaycoins.com, and we have the old versions of the podcast there under the podcast button. Or if you're in Midtown and have time to stop by, just drop on by. We'll do a little five-minute show and tell with all the gold and silver we've got in stock. Figure out where your mind is with everything and how we can help get you feeling comfortable about all of it.
All right. Some good stuff there, Angelo. How can people get in touch and where can they find you?
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. Of course, you can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com. You can do some shopping there with the shop button without leaving your house. You can check out the new items as they're coming in. You can look at those on Facebook or on Instagram. Follow us on either place. And, of course, you know, we'd always love to see you in person. If you want to give us a call, 725-190.
All right. Thanks, Angelo. Have a great weekend.
You too, sir.
That's Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And now back out to Jeff Poor and April Marie Fogle, co-hosting on this Midday Mobile Friday.
Thank you for that, Dalton. 27 minutes after the hour on this Friday afternoon. Jeff Poor in for the legendary Sean Sullivan, along with April Marie Fogle of Alabama today. April, we were just talking to Congressman Gosar. They got some rallies going. These protests, at least there's some kind of semblance of protest about what's going on and what appears to be an effort to undermine elections. I think that's maybe the allegation. But does this move the needle?
Well, I think that it's important for the nation to see two things. First off, the stark contrast between the rallies that conservatives are hosting, where you've got them chanting back the blue and you know, protect the vote and, you know, God bless America, praying and singing, though the COVID part of me makes me cringe when I think of them singing. That's neither here nor there. But I think the contrast is important because there's this message that if Trump wins again, our nation is going to go into this dark, hateful, terrible place, which is what they've painted us into, you know, they've been trying to paint us into earlier throughout his first term. And so I like the contrast of that. While we were on with Gosar, it was announced, he mentioned voting machines. And while we were on with him, Fox Business had live a press conference where the software used to tabulate the votes in one county sent 6,000 Trump votes to Biden. 47 counties used that software. And I believe that's in Michigan. And so that's kind of a problem.
I'll tell you what, I don't know what the long-term implications of this are, but the way the media have been, the way the media have acted just recklessly and irresponsible in some cases, I don't know if there's much recourse for the public other than just to turn it off, but it's like people like us always watching it. But is this just going to change? Or is it still just going to be so asymmetrical for the time being?
Well, I think that here's the problem. The problem is each of the news channels, whether it's a conservative leaning like Fox, though they called Arizona early, and I'm very salty about that, whether it's a conservative leaning like Fox or CNN, MSNBC, whatever it is, BC, and the papers, I think they have to reevaluate what their role in elections is. What is their role? Because one of the problems we've had where Georgia says we have 50,000 votes left to count, and then they find another box. Okay, we got 75,000 votes. Okay, and it kind of goes back and forth, and it's this in real time stuff. I almost think Nevada's got the idea when they're like, we're not telling you diddly. As long as the campaigns, the parties, and it's done lawfully and quietly, I'd rather have the silence than the, oop, we take that back. Oop, we did that wrong. Oh, just kidding. Because I feel like that's part of what is causing all of the distrust. It is that the media channels are all reporting something different, and then they're having to take it back and correct things. And I'd feel much better if we had the, let's just get this right the first time instead of undoing it. So I think that not just will elected officials, states and federal agencies, the federal government, Congress, have to look at how do we protect the integrity of elections, but I think the media has to look at their role in calling states early and reporting, you know, the number of outstanding ballots by various different outlets. I think we have to look at the way we're going to do that in the future.
April, we got to get in a break here. We will return. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. Jeff Poor, April Marie Fogle filling in for Sean Sullivan, who is getting some well-deserved rest here over the next few days. Coming up Monday, if you're a Midday Mobile listener, you'll have me and State Representative Mike Ball filling in. Maybe he'll bring his guitar, maybe he won't. But we'll maybe by then have some clarity on what's going on with regards to this election. And obviously, I think we're going to get back in the swing of things with the state politics and tracking that down. We talked to Chris Elliott during my show earlier today. He's less optimistic about a special session. But there's a lot of work to be done before the regular session. Just maybe we're going to have to put that off. I mean, it's, what, February 1st? So I don't think you're clamoring to get back to Montgomery with COVID in the air. April, Governor Ivey adding another month to the safer at home order. Probably something she had to do, you think?
Well, I think the national numbers are climbing. I think with the holidays, people are going to be more exposed. So she's saying now's not the time to get rid of it. I think we see the mask mandate continue at least through the first of the year, because people are going to be getting together for Christmas and Thanksgiving in spite of all the warnings. I'm having a small, everybody go ahead and curse me if you'd like to. I'm having a small birthday party for my son who turns 2 tomorrow. I think people are starting to get a little bit more back to normal. And so the mask are to say, okay, as you guys do this, let's try to contain the spread as much as possible. So I think we're going to see it. My gut says till January.
Well, here's the thing. You know, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, Tennessee were all supposed to be the test cases. But I'm not one of these guys that watch these numbers to a very specific degree, but it doesn't occur to me, it doesn't seem to me at least, that the mask mandate, with or without the mask mandate, it really is that big of a difference.
You know, I think the thing we're struggling with as a state and as a nation is the how do you know? I mean, right now, there's currently active 100, and there's, let's see, hold on, is this right? No, total 199,000 cases right now. And so I'm just wondering, here in Alabama, looking at the numbers, I worry that they would go much higher. Let me say that. I worry they'd go much higher. But I guess that's kind of the point, right? Is there's no way to prove a negative. We can't prove what would happen if there were no mandate unless we get rid of the mandate. Which, again, it's going to happen. We can't keep this indefinitely.
251-343-0106 if you want to weigh in. Hit us up with a text line, probably the best way to do that. Unnamed texter says, rallies won't matter, mainstream media won't cover them except to say how bad it is. So all of these protest efforts to express our grievances about the way this election has unfolded seem to be for naught.
Well, you mentioned at the top of the show, is this a resurgence of the Tea Party movement? And if we're going to get people excited about the Republican Party again, if we're going to create these cohesive groups that can together fight the bad policies that could potentially come out if Biden wins the White House, or heaven forbid, the White House and the Senate, we have to be able to get together and express, you know, our displeasure or whatever it is. And I think the fact that they were able to pull hundreds of people in different rallies across the state or across the country, that's a good thing.
You know, though, it occurs to me, though, that you're gonna have I feel like the Democrats and the media are for in exchange for the presidency, the bargain they're making, they're going to get a very, very motivated and activated Republican base. And look, we got reapportionment coming up, state legislatures in control of Republicans control of a lot of state legislatures. That there's a handful of issues that this could come back and haunt Democrats to get this W notched.
Well, again, if they do win it, and I'm not sure they will. I it's so funny. I all day, every day, I get texts since Tuesday, basically saying, what do you think? What do you think? I'm at 70-30. What are you at? I think Biden wins at 7. I'm putting it at 70-30 Biden. Where are you right now?
Yeah, I'm about there. 75-25. It's just the vote tallies are in his favor. The public seems to be dealing with the notion that he is going to be the president of elect. They're easing into it. It's not coming all at once. But the other thing is, I heard they're moving Secret Service assets around to get those in place for a would be president elect Biden. So as the longer we go, guys, I know you don't like to hear this, but the longer we go, I think that number changes in Biden's favor. Hey, April, we're almost up out of time here, but in case folks want to get in touch with you, check out Alabama Today, give them the 411.
Yeah, so you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Parler at April Marie. That's APRYLMARIE. And you can find my op-eds, ranting and ravings, on Alabama Today. That's altoday.com.
Yeah. So y'all go check AL Today out, Alabama Today out, if you would. I think it's one of the four or five websites that I check out on a regular basis. Other than that, going forward here, I don't know if there's any more surprises that could come our way, but maybe we're just so desensitized to things in the news media and the shock value. It just seems to wear off. So I guess it won't. You don't really feel it until we hear.
It's going to sneak up on us.
President-elect Joe Biden or Donald Trump's reelected, and lo and behold, wow, didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I think that there will be a moment of truth. I'm telling everybody now, I said, just prepare for it to be Biden and be pleasantly surprised if it's Trump. And that's kind of, I think, where I am, is I'm not in this anxious state of, oh my gosh, I have to know, oh my goodness, get the results in. I think we have to get them in, but we have to do it right. And if we have, as we just literally discovered while we were on air this afternoon, if we have machines that are messing up the votes, I'd rather we do it right than we do it fast. And that's where we need to wrap our mind around as a nation, where we need to be.
Well, here's the thing. All this pushback saying, oh, you can't say there's voter fraud. You got to show proof of voter fraud. It feels to me like they're really trying to marginalize the messenger.
Here's the thing is, and we're about to hit our hard break here, but here's where I am. I think the voter fraud message is too simplified. I don't know that it's a huge somebody somewhere with 100,000 ballots, but I think that the little bits here and there, the 6,000 votes that we just found on that one precinct, I think all of the little things that keep coming up are something we need to talk about. The Project Veritas video, there's just too many small that will overall be a big number at the end of the day. Too many small occurrences that that can tip the scales, and we need to be aware of those things.
All right, well said, April. Guys, we got to get out of here. It's been an honor to be with the audience today on Midday Mobile. April Marie, thank you.
Thank you. Talk soon.
All right, we'll do it again real soon. Make sure you tune in on Monday. This has been Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5.